Recently, I heard one line of a bhajan. I only heard one line, and that line has the entire essence of human life. So the line goes, Kyon tu piwe pani hansani, kyon tu piwe pani? He's saying, oh female swan, why are you drinking water? Why are you drinking water? So, today you have to put on your thinking caps. What do you think this line means?
It separates milk and water, Hans.
Right.
So he knows to differentiate what she wants to drink and what not to drink.
Right, right.
So that's the wisdom of swan.
Yes, yes.
Like you need to learn what to differentiate and what to consume and not to consume. Not only like eating-wise, but mentally.
Right.
And then action-wise.
Right. That's very good. So the swan is a mythical bird that knows how to, it is said that if you put milk and put half of water in it, it can actually separate the water from the milk and actually drink the milk and leave the water behind. But here the saint is saying, Kyon tu piwe pani hansani? Why are you drinking water? So what is the meaning of that? Yes.
Hansani is supposed to be taking the pose, not the water. So we as human beings are supposed to be taking that pose or the preciousness, which is the self, our own self, rather than the worldly W-O-E-T world, which is the
right.
Pani.
Right, right. I think, yes, all of you have explained it very well. I'll just kind of summarize. So as we said, the swan is a mythical bird that when you mix milk and water, it can drink the milk and leaves the water behind. The milk represents energy, represents nutrition, represents goodness, and water is a filler. Not that anything wrong with, but it's a filler. So similarly, in life, we have the ability to discriminate, to choose the right from the wrong, the real from the unreal, the spiritual from the material. And most of us live in life and just use life as a filler, just as the swan. Filler means I'm here, so I have to live the life like everybody else. There is a very beautiful old song, you know, Duniya mein hum aaye hain to jeena hi padega. Jeevan hai agar zeher hai to peena hi padega. That means I'm here in the world, so I have to live, and if the world is a poison, I have to drink. So this song says that we are here in this world, so I might as well live. And the world is a poison, I might as well drink it. So most people are here and they say, whatever everybody is doing, whatever I'm supposed to do, let me just do it. Okay. But there are very few people who are like the swan who can select and pick up. Just as milk represents energy and nutrition, so the spiritual path, the spiritual knowledge represents energy and nutrition for our soul. Of course, the worldly path is good for our body, mind, and intellect. You know, for the body, for the mind. But for my spiritual self, the spiritual path is the one that is a true energy and nutrition. So the saint is telling us, you have the ability to drink milk. Why are you drinking water? Why are you choosing the material path when you could choose? It's a very beautiful line. It's so powerful. The entire essence of Vedanta, the entire essence of spiritual living is in this. So I thought it's worth covering. And the 18th chapter tells us how to live our life, how to choose the milk over the water, and mostly through talking about the three gunas, you know, the sattva being the purity, the knowledge, rajas is passion, and tamas is laziness, delusion. So last week we had heard about the sattvic jnana, rajasic jnana, and tamasic jnana. Rajasic, the sattvic jnana is the one that sees oneness. Just as there is one space, same way there is one consciousness pervading everybody, everything, and I and everybody are one. So seeing that oneness, the person works in the world. The rajasic knowledge or jnanam is that sees differences. I am different from her, him, everybody is separate. And so it leads to competition, greed, jealousy. And the tamasic jnana, which we had talked about last week, leads to fanaticism because he sees a part of it as the whole. My faith alone is good. My religion alone is good. Everybody else should be killed. Or my system of economics is good. You know, communism alone is good or capitalism alone. So seeing only his limited view, disregarding everybody, is tamas. Today Krishna will continue and tell us about what is sattvic, rajasic and tamasic karma. Now what is karma? Karma is translated as action, and Krishna tells us that the body dealing with the objects, the mind dealing with emotions, in the intellect dealing with thoughts, they are all karmas. So the BMI dealing with the OET is karma, and every action, it can be physical, it can be emotional, or it can be intellectual. So they are all karmas. Karmas are not only physical, they can also be by speech, also by thought. So what is sattvic, rajasic and tamasic karma? So we'll talk about that. Verse number 23, it talks about sattvic karma. Chapter 18, verse 23. Niyatam sangarahitam,
niyatam sangarahitam,
aragadveshatakritam,
aphalaprepsunakarma, aphalaprepsunakarma,
yattat sattvikam uchyate,
yattat sattvikam uchyate.
So niyatam, niyatam means obligatory duties. Obligatory duties should be done, how? Sangarahitam, without attachment. And we'll talk about each word. A raga dvesha takritam. Raga means like, dvesha means dislike. A raga dvesha means without likes and dislikes, kritam. Actions that are done, obligatory duties that are done without attachment, without likes and dislikes, and a phala prepsuna, and without regard for the fruit, without regard for the result, for the fruit, karma yat tat sattvikam uchyate. Such activities are said to be sattvic. So let us look at what are the sattvic karmas. First word Krishna uses is niyatam. Niyatam, we have covered it before, but just to summarize, niyatam are obligatory duties that we have to perform. It's obligatory, there is no choice. And in that, they are divided into nityam and naimityam. Nityam means daily duties. So daily duties is I have to get up, take a shower, have breakfast, go to work, take care of my family, take care of, you know, my surroundings, take care of my society. I have duties towards my family, towards my society. So those are daily duties. And naimityam are duties that are special. That means somebody passed away, I have to go visit them and express my sympathy. Or there is a wedding or a birth, I have to go and express congratulations. Or there is Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, where the family, I have to organize the dinner and so on. So those are special activities. So those have to be done. And how should they be done? That is called sattvic person who does the activities without attachment. Attachment means I plus I want. I plus I want, and what will I get out of it? That when a person does, then that is called sata. You know, that is called selfish work, but a work without attachment, without I and I want, as that's what they say, work is worship. For such an individual, whatever work he or she is doing in the world is the worship of the Lord. The Lord is the one that has given me all the abilities to work. Everybody here is the Lord himself. They are all created by. So when I am serving anybody or when I am doing any work, it is a worship of the Lord who is supreme, who is in everybody. That oneness when a person sees. And so for him, no matter what work is assigned, he may be assigned, you know, to clean the gutters or sweep the floor or to, you know, keep track of the finances. No matter whatever work is assigned, doing it as a worship of the Lord. No work is small or big in such a person's eyes. Wherever I have been placed, O Lord, I am thankful to you. Wherever I have been placed, whatever abilities I have been given, let my work be worship. Araga dveshata kritam, and without likes and dislikes. Now we always run after things we like and run away from things we dislike. There was a famous saint in Maharashtra very recently in the 20th century, Nisargadatta Maharaj, and he said that human beings are always running after things that give them pleasure and run away from things that do not give us pleasure. And that is very common. I do things I like. I don't want to do things I dislike. But the teacher says, whatever your duties are, don't worry about whether I like it, whether I dislike it. Why is that? Because if I keep on doing things that I like, see, vasanas are my tendencies, are my spiritual, my selfish tendencies. And so if I keep doing things I like, that increases that vasana. You know, if I say like to eat sweets and I keep eating sweets, it will increase my desire. It could be anything, sweets, it could be coffee, it could be, sense pleasures, it could be, eating, drinking, I like working, overwork. That's what in the sixth chapter Sri Krishna says, a yogi neither works too much nor does not work at all. So living a life of moderation. And if I run away from things I dislike, I don't like this, I don't want to do this. And even though I'm supposed to do it, I pass on the work to somebody else. Why? Because I don't enjoy that. So that increases your negative vasana too. Because I have positive vasana where I like something, and then I have a negative tendency, I don't like this. And so the whole goal of spiritual progress is to reduce the vasanas. If you look at the lives of saints, they worked unselfishly without regard for, and all great people, look at the life of Mahatma Gandhi, Saint Francis, Mother Teresa. They did whatever work was asked of them without asking what is in it for me, and without worrying about likes or dislikes. This person is clean, this person is dirty. I serve them equally. Whether a person is high caste, low caste, whether a person is a friend or an enemy, universal love, so that is called working without likes or dislikes and without any expectation. See, you and I always, when we work, what is in it for me? If I'm going to get something out of it, then I will work. Otherwise, I'm going to waste my time. I'd rather stay home, sleep, watch TV. No, the human's life is meant for service. I must give back to community. I must serve. And I must, whatever job is assigned, without any expectation. At the end of the, even if I don't get any praise, people say, I worked for 8 hours in that, social organization, and they didn't even ask me a cup of tea. Chai ka cup bhi nahi pucha mujhe. I worked for 8 hours for them. So they say, Gurudev says, so your 8 hours worth is only worth a cup of tea? If I got a cup of tea, I'm happy? No, it doesn't matter. Even the person says, oh, he didn't even thank me. I did so much for him. At least he could have said thanks. Forget about helping me in return. No, I'm not even expecting thanks. I do it because it is my duty, because I'm supposed to do it. If somebody thanks me, fine. If somebody reciprocates, fine. If not, ultimately, see, there is a cosmic law of karma and everything is added in that. So it doesn't matter whether I get praise, whether somebody returns or not. What I have done, I know and the Lord knows. So that understanding, and with that, a person works without any expectation. Actually, if you look at the lives of great masters, they worked for us even though they didn't need to. Now, they were a realized master, like Shankaracharya or Jesus or Buddha or Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda. They could have just stayed in their cave, in their meditation, because once they have realized the truth, they have nothing to accomplish in this world. They have already gone to the higher zone and they have become one with God. The rest of the life, they can just stay in that bliss. But they went through so much discomfort to help us all. And there's a very, very beautiful story called Plato, the great Greek philosopher, Plato's Cave. And this was again popularized by another author called Livingston in Jonathan Segal. Jonathan Livingston Segal was the very famous book, is a bestseller. So Plato's Cave is a very interesting story about, so it's said that there was one community of people, several hundred of them, who lived in a cave inside a mountain. They lived in a cave. They had never gone out of that cave. And the cave was deep inside the mountain, and the mountain was spread for miles all around. And they had never gone out. They lived in the cave, and the animals, they, you know, whatever they took care of, you know, cows and this and that. And, you know, so they managed from that, whatever fungi and whatever grew. So they lived in the cave, and they had been living in the cave for generations. And they never knew that there is any world outside. But then one man one day says, you know, is there any life outside this cave? He starts asking. So they say, come on, stop asking this stupid question. Your father lived in this cave. Your grandfather lived in this cave. Your great-grandfather. Why are you bothering? You know, we are all happy here. No. There has to be something better, life. People call him a fool. So he says, one evening, you know, he sets out and he takes some water and he says, let me see if I can get out of this cave. He walks, and then he hits the rocks. The path is very narrow. He's bleeding and his head gets hurt and he can't find the way. He goes this way, wrong way, then that way. There are multiple passages, tunnels, and he gets bruised, bleeding, and next day he comes back and everybody says, see, we told you there is no path out of this cave. You're stupid. You know, you went, look, you're bleeding, you got hurt. He says, no, that I have to find out. I have to have this. He had this strong desire. He said, next time I'm going to be better prepared. So he took more food. Previously he had no food. He took 2 to 3 days of food, took some water, put some bandages, you know, so that he wouldn't get scratched. And also he remembered that last time I took this wrong path and I had to come back and that wrong path. So he remembered all that. So this time, better prepared, he goes for 2 days, 3 days, and finally hitting and all. Finally, he comes out of that cave and he sees the world. He has never seen sunlight, and there's sunlight and there's green trees and grass and fresh air. And oh, wow, what is this world? You know, I have never seen. And there's a meadow. He starts rolling in the grass and laughing and happy and joyful. Hours he just spends enjoying the sun because he had never seen what is this thing called sunlight. He had no idea. He's in so much joy, so much bliss. And then he says, you know what? My poor people over there, they are suffering in that cave. They have been there for generations. And they don't know how beautiful the world is outside. Let me go back and bring them. Now, he didn't need to go back, right? He had already reached the world. Why does he have to go through all the... No, because of concern for his people. So he comes back, walks all the... This time he walks faster because he knows the way. And the people say, where did you go? What did you see? What happened? Are you okay? Oh, I'm fine. It was wonderful. He said, what was... I saw this beautiful world with the sunlight and the birds chirping and the green grass and the trees. And he says, you're talking nonsense. There is no such world. If there was world, our forefathers would have discovered it. We would have discovered. You're just making it up. We don't believe you. Shut up. You're just stupid. And they curse him. Some people even, you know, slap him, beat him. Nobody listens to him. Okay, you don't want to listen, but a couple of young men say, you know, what he says, maybe it is true, maybe it is not. So they say, can you take us to that other world? He said, yeah, sure, just follow me. So he starts following, and they are behind him, and he goes, and after a while he looks, they are gone. Why? Because they went a few hours and they got tired. They said, this guy is a crazy fool. You know, he's taking us in some wrong path. So they didn't go. So he, you know, where did they go? They are gone. So he came back. So he said, what happened to you guys? We don't believe there is a world. He says, I'm telling you there is a world. Come on. So tomorrow let's go again. So they took food and water. And next day, this time he was behind them because he says, these guys will fall back. So as they are trying to, you know, slow down, he's pushing them. Come on, come on, come on. You have to go. And he pushes them. And finally, they also see this beautiful world. And they are enjoying it. And then he says, you know what? Now that you have experienced this world, it is your job to go bring them. You know, why should we bother about them? They didn't even listen to you. They even cursed you. They called you a fool. They beat you. And you are still telling us to go bring them out? He said, yeah. So that's the message of these Mahatmas, these great souls. You know, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda was with his guru in the Himalayas, and his guru Tapovan Maharaj, you know, he stayed with him. He experienced the highest truth. He had studied everything, realized. And he tells his guru, I want to go to the plains and teach this message to the people. And his guru said, look, whoever wants to learn will come here in the Himalayas. You came to learn from me, right? Anybody who genuinely has the desire will come. He said, no, my people in India are suffering, in ignorance. This beautiful message of Gita and the Upanishads, the whole world needs to hear this knowledge. And he came and he went through so much hardship. He was criticized. He was threatened. Things were made very difficult for him. There was no place for him to stay. Nobody wanted to deal. So Jesus went through so many problems. Buddha, Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya also, when he was traveling, and he went through a lot of competition and conflicts. So these Mahatmas, they could have stayed in their happiness, but they come because they want us to also experience that joy that they have experienced. That's why Gurudev said, I work because I want people to realize that they can be better too. And Gurudev said, even if I can change one life, my life's purpose would be fulfilled. That was the vision of that great Mahatma. And he's not only changed one life, thousands of lives. There are 300 centers like these, where thousands of people are studying, and children. We have 160 children here, and there are some of the centers which have 1,000, 1,200, 2,000 children, and the adults' classes have 250, 300 people attending. So many people are benefiting. Recently, I talked to one family whose children came only for very few years to Bal Vihar, and then they lived in the Northeast, and in the higher classes, they didn't bring them. But they only came for a few years, and I asked them, how are your children doing? So she said, my daughter drives an hour, she's in Tampa. She drives an hour every day to go to the Chinmaya Mission. Not every day, but every Sunday. She drives an hour to go to the Chinmaya Mission in Tampa to listen to the classes. Both my children, even though they are not close to a center, they are reading the Gurudev's Bhagavad Gita. They are listening to Chinmaya Mission, So these people are not attending centers. They don't belong to any mission. But that's what this one person's vision of spreading this knowledge, thousands of kids and adults are benefiting. That's the benefit of Bal Vihar. When you bring your children and plant the seed, sooner or later it will bear fruit. Wherever they are, that is very important. So that's why they said the sattvic jnana is one that is done for the benefit of others as a worship of the Lord, not worrying about pleasure or pain, and without expectation of any result, not worrying about what is in it for me. It's not what I can get from the world, like John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Because most of us think, what can I get from the world? No, the idea is what I can give. And the last line, the message again and again we have talked about, this Bhagavad Gita and these teachings are meant to evaluate myself. How am I? Not how is my husband, how is my neighbor, how that person, he's very tamasic. He needs to start doing some more work. Oh, this person is working all the time. I should bring him to the Gita. No, am I practicing sattva or not? How is my action? Should I try as much as possible, even when I'm working, work with a sattvic attitude, as work is worship. We're not saying you need to stop work and go to put on orange clothes and go in the Himalayas and meditate. No, work, but make your work a worship for the Lord without expectation. So this whole teaching is for myself. And anytime I find myself falling into tamas, which is laziness, or rajas, which is greed, I should bring myself up. So living a life of alertness is the message that Gurudev gives us through this commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the sattvic karma, sattvic action. Any questions, any comments?
I think it's a good reminder that we're only working on ourselves. Like it is easy to go, I think about that person. Which reflects the focus on where it should be.
Exactly. True, yeah, the focus should be on myself. Because ultimately, or other people, other way they read it, oh, Krishna, this Gita is beautiful. What a message to Arjuna. See, he changed Arjuna from, but this is not for Arjuna, it is for me. You know, this whole Gita, Krishna is talking to me. In the Bible, Jesus is talking to me. Buddha is talking to me. He's not talking to his disciples. He's talking to me. So read all of these scriptures as how do I fit in this yardstick? Because the prophet has put a yardstick for us. Okay, this is where you're supposed to be. And am I meeting that expectation of my guru or my prophet or not? So that is the message of these scriptures. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om.